and spasmed and did all those scary things. And we were, can you pass a drug test? And I said, probably not. And they were like, then you're off for filming. Where H and I realized I couldn't see the jump. She's like, what do you mean it comes into view as you go up the ramp?
Kia ora everyone, welcome back to the Side Hit Podcast. I'm your host Fat Tony, and today with us we have Carla Carlson, otherwise known as Simcox. How you going?
Well, thank you, Tony.
So you've been down here for a couple of days.
We have. We came in to hang out in Wanaka and have had a great time hanging with Drew and Shaz and heading up the Your Wave.
So tell us about that. It looks pretty sweet. Like,
it's epic. It's like a fully customizable wave, left, right, big, small. Lots of airbags around it, and you can wake surf or surf. Yeah.
And so, like, something like a beginner can do, or?
Yeah, like, they're all levels because they can adjust the wave so much. Today, Tui got on the board with Tim, and he did rad dad surfing with a six-year-old, which was cool.
Tim's the man.
He is.
Yeah, good dude. And how'd you go on it?
I mean, you know, I tried 20 times and rode two waves.
That sounds like my surfing experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I seen there might have been a proud mum moment there.
Oh, totally. We're just so stoked on Grace getting out there. So yesterday there was like 25 dudes and they all worked there and knew each other, and she totally jumped in and got on the wake surfer and the wake skate.
Yeah. So it's Friday's out, it's like locals night or something. So everyone, all the frothers are out there.
All the frothers are out there and they were having a great time.
Diggs is the biggest frother and always there.
Yes, he is very helpful.
Yeah. And how old's Gracie?
She's 15.
Oh yeah.
Going on 16. Got a boyfriend called Jacob.
Oh, sweet. And you're down here for a while then?
I'm pulling out tomorrow. Yeah, originally we were coming into town for a friend's wedding. And we were certainly not going to waste the opportunity. It's been really great to catch up with Drew and Shaz today. And
I mean, two legends of our culture right there.
Oh, man. I mean, at one time, maybe the turn of the century, we were New Zealand's favourite female writers.
Mm. Shit, like I've said in enough episodes how Drew's interview was that pivotal moment for a lot of shredders.
Yes.
But I mean, Shaz was kind of like that underground, almost like the Pixies to the Nirvana.
Yes.
Like, I've even seen that when I put Shaz's interview out last year, like, everyone that knew was fucking on it.
Yeah.
You know? And they're like, no fucking way, you know?
Yeah, she's rad. Mm. She's rad and was always a fierce competitor.
Yeah.
And today she fucking killed it on the wave.
I guess that writing DNA doesn't leave you, does it?
No, it does not. And maybe she'll be joining Tim more Fridays there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, Tim. I worked for him for a summer a while back. He's a good dude. Good dude to work for,
yeah,
too.
Great dude. Mm. Top man.
I'll kick this one into gear. Carla, where are you from and how did snowboarding get into the picture?
I'm from rural Hawke's Bay, and snowboarding came to me after a little ski experiences with my family. Similar to Shaz, you know, did the hut life thing on Whakapapa. And I was a very average skier.
Okay, and so was your family like a ski family or anything, or not really?
I think Mum had already blown out her knee by then, but she was the ski girl, and that's where I really get it from. I think I've got this great Hercardi's pass from 1967. It's awesome. So. Right before I was born. No, 77. Oh, fuck, now I don't know how old I am. Yeah. But, you know, I saw a couple of maybe pictures crossed my vision somewhere, but the pivotal experience for me was recognizing a friend on the Central Plateau, picking up a hitchhiker, and he had his snowboard with him, and we traded a day riding on his kit for hanging at the flat, and that's how I was introduced to snowboarding.
Random.
Random ass.
That's real random. So what? You just picked this hitcher up?
You can stay
at my house if I can ever go on your board.
Yes, I did actually know him.
Oh, right.
In that interview back in the day, I didn't say I knew him, but I did know him.
Yeah,
I'm not that crazy. Okay. Every loving. No. So yeah, Dallas Butler let me ride his Santa Cruz snowboard and... you know, total Kiwiness, just went to the top of the hill, or the top of the chairlift, because obviously wasn't going to tackle the T-bars on day one.
Yeah.
But top of the chairlift, top of the Knoll Ridge, and just ate shit all the way down to the top of the waterfall.
Yeah.
And then a chick came up to me, I think she was even Australian, and she was like, here, do these three things and you'll be able to get down on your heels. So all through... my snowboarding history, there's been lots of women dropping in the love.
So
yeah, right from that one.
So was there a moment where snowboarding clicked and you're like, oh, this is my shit, like, oh fuck yeah, this is like, I'm hooked, like,
yes.
what was that moment?
Probably the first time I got on my edge and made a real turn.
Yeah,
because before that it was just skidding around and I don't know, you know, it was pretty messy.
Yeah. And I'm guessing it probably doesn't help when you're got size 11 boots and you're not size 11 on a 162 or something.
Massive board and flopping around that day. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a great experience. And then I was like, wow, I'd love to have a snowboard. And I was living in the Central Plateau. So I went to the Owakuni shop. I forget what it's called now at the time.
It's the one TCB?
Yeah, like, that's what it is now. Maybe it's what it was always. Fuck, I should know, Nate. Sorry, bro. and brought my first snowboard there. And it was... Wow. And I had white high back... Low backs. Base... White. Baseless
Holy
low
shit.
Backs.
Yeah.
It was insane.
That's a stamp of the time right there.
Fat board. And then the following year, I came down here and got a cooler board.
I don't know, mid-90s at the time, baseless bindings with low backs was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I remember I always had dudes telling me to cut my high backs down.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah. Oh, always hit it on chair, dude, cut your high backs down. Oh,
dude. Freaking Jesus, now I think about that, I want that.
So did that lead you to doing seasons in Ruapehu then, or?
Well, so this is board one, and we'll do seasons in Ruapehu. Didn't really start until Rach hired me as a rookie snowboard instructor.
Right, so what was the path between that Santa, well, your new board with the baseless bindings to
Rach.
Instruction?
It was shenaniganizing around on the Central Plateau with my baseless bindings. And then I came down here for a winter and lived in Luggett and rode at Triple Cone.
Wow. So that would have been about 96.
Yeah.
Shit, so Luggett would have been way... That would have been like... Living in Luggett in that time, it would have been like pretty far removed.
It was a shoebox.
Yeah. So what was the motivation then to come down to Luggett and TC?
Dual purpose, we wanted to, came down with my dude, and he was chefing at Edgewater, and I was cleaning the rooms, which we just wanted to paddle and snowboard and hike, and granola it out, you know.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Because TC at the time, that would have been what, the saddle would have been like the T-bar to the chairlift, or the chairlift to the T-bar. And then
is that the T-bar, the girls' poach?
Yeah. And what, a double chair it may have been. Shit.
Okay.
No. But was there any rippers that caught your attention back then? Because there was a pretty heavy contingent riding TC back in those
days. Oh, yeah, and there was nobody. I knew nobody. I was in my own little world other than seeing Richard and Conrad around. Yeah, but I was just granola doll in my own world and totally unaware, but, you know, thought I might want to make some turns.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, first impression of your first day riding TC?
Oh, that's a little challenging just to get up there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm a huge. That was fun. It was steep. It was steep. I can't remember much else. Tussock. I wasn't used to Tussock. You know,
yeah.
It was...
yeah. Pretty humbling hill the first time there. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, especially some of the heads that are riding there and stuff. Because they'd be like Ollie Burke's prime.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And he was like, he still rips that place up now, but, you know, Atlantis Ollie.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, I know, I was very unaware.
And you were living beside a pretty well-known fixture in Wanaka at the time.
Fuck, did you know him? Do you know who that person is?
Everyone
okay, did. Is he still alive?
I think so.
God, I would love to see him.
I think he works with, like, Viola or something, the water company.
Dude, he was classic.
Yeah, yeah. You can say who it was, though.
Sparrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sparrow's classic, and so he kept us well-stocked.
Mm.
And informed. Yeah, it was great. And Kaiwhakapai used to do the most delicious, like, banana cream pies or something. Like, he made sweet, delicious, yummy things. I don't know. Maybe I was bent off. I don't know. Maybe I was high. I don't know.
So we're going to take it back a little bit, listeners. What's OPC?
It's the Sir Edmund Hillary Outdoor Pursuit Centre, based in... just at the bottom of Whakapapa, really. And that was my tertiary education, diploma in outdoor leadership. So you can follow me anywhere.
All right. Yeah. Oh, sweet. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had to do work experience, and I was living in Tauranga, and obviously I was going to go to the local shop and turn screws and, you know, put people on boards.
Yeah, right.
Stoke them out. Yeah.
Okay, and then TC after that, obviously.
Yeah. Then
Did I even ask why you chose to come down to Luggett and TC?
Oh, yeah, Luggett was because I'd been at OPC doing my year-long course, and my instructor owned the house next to Sparrow.
Oh, right.
So she hooked me up with that and said, you've got to go there and experience the world and, you know, do some more education.
Yeah, so it was pretty sweet, though, just... bust out of the Edgewater and then go shred.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, unless you filthy animals had left the room hideously messy and then I was not meeting my quota and not going snowboarding.
Oh, there's some filthy animals too.
Yes.
And so then what happened then? You just head back up north and then hit the...
Head back up north and then did like a double summer paddling.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Nepal and India and... peddled crazy shit, and I'm still alive.
No way. What's that all like? What's the story there?
It was like super beautiful. The people were great. I felt very safe, except for when I was in the water. And we were working for a rafting company as safety boaters.
Yeah.
And float trips were obviously incredibly easy. And once it got to bigger stuff, I was only ever going to pick someone up at the bottom.
Because I imagine things would have been a bit more she'll be right over there.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you got an example of some raw dog shit?
I mean, no, let's not go any raw dog shit tonight. No. I mean, we're putting in front of clients, doing the little chat about this, pedal that. And upstream, they're gutting an animal, and it's quite faster than like, oh, boy. Okay.
That's the remains of the guy that didn't listen.
That's right. Listen to your guide.
Oh, man. All right, so how did instructing come into the picture then?
Oh, there's this most amazing woman called Rachel Newton, and she put out in... paper or something in the Central Plateau Taupo looking for these instructors at Whakapapa, and that's how all that happened. She's a legend and got us all in order.
Shit, so you found it just in the paper then?
Yeah, man. I'm very sheltered. Fucking job thing, yeah.
Oh, so how was that then? Like, that was learning to, so what was that, up at Ruapehu then?
Yep, Whakapapa.
And then how was that, learning to be an instructor?
You know, I wouldn't have wanted to be Rach and round up all of us animals. Yeah. We were just savage. Richard Hunt was second year, Liz and Conrad and Pat and I were first year, along with a whole bunch of others. Like, the industry was booming at that time.
Mm.
Instructors were pumping out lessons. We were renting gear like crazy. It was awesome.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a bit of a, not as much of a turn nerd as Rach, but I could get into it.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Like, I could get into it. So yeah, she just set the goal for all of us that we were going to take our stage one at Tūturu at the end of the season, and it was going to happen. And we're all going to be instructors and get a pay rise next year.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I mean, shit, she's had her hand in a lot of people's snowboarding, totally. Either instructing or coaching competitors, yeah. And yeah, all of that. And she's been mentioned, rightly so, in a lot of interviews on here.
Yes.
And it was one of those things where sort of like, remember interviewing JJ, talking about Rachel, and we're like, hang on a minute, I was interviewing Spy and we were talking about Rachel, and that's like three generations ago.
Crazy,
you know,
it's
kind of pretty out of it. You know?
Yeah, she's an old cow now.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to say unsung hero.
Oh, yes, unsung hero. Yeah, we love that. Yeah,
but you do you, man.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we were reminiscing today about being old girls, but, you know.
Mm. And was there some other heads around at that time?
At that time, Greg Prowse was hot shit on his hard plates. Him and his buddy Brad, they were carving turns out and on their own program. So that was awesome.
Mm.
Yeah. But I can't remember who our senior instructors were.
Okay, it was like Louise Muir kicking around.
She was our examiner at Tūturu.
Yeah.
I think she'd already left the North Island and was on a return, maybe. She would have had a place in...
Because that name seems to pop up whenever Rachel and instructing gets brought up. Louise is not far behind.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they were like the chicks in charge, dude.
Yeah. And I've got here John Shelley.
Yeah, John Shelley, he also took his, we messaged about this, he took the stage one with us and had trained somewhere else, so, you know, it was, who the hell are you?
Mm.
And, you know, we sized each other up pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's a good rider. And at the end they rate us, you know, and I got second in the stage one. And John Shelley got third Z's, so I always call him third Z's now. When he's a much better rider than me.
And did you know Pam Bell, or was she around at all?
I seen her riding a couple of times at Fokker's with her big old rugby boyfriend at the time, but I didn't know her personally, you know, knew she was out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that must have been sort of towards the end of her run with snowboarding too.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
And we sort of talked off mic about influences, but there's a snowboard video I sort of want to talk about that was like an influence on...
Yes.
On you.
On me, my very first snowboard video was Whiskey Storm.
Whiskey Storm. Was that Whiskey, the Canadian one?
Okay,
where
they're
bashing bottles over the heads.
Yes, yes!
Yeah, Whiskey.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, I thought I was going to be living in the forest and burning fires and making snowboard videos. No, I didn't think that. But I thought that kind of edgy thing was rad because I'd seen kind of the more clean-cut Pam version. Mm. And this was like on the videos that it's like social media. I was exposed.
Yeah.
I was exposed to it, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a snowboard video to have your first impression of snowboarding as a bunch of drunk Canadians bashing bottles over their heads and doing other shit.
Yeah, it was wild. Wow.
Yeah, which led to what, a pretty famous quote to spy at a development camp?
They asked, had a questionnaire for all the riders about alcohol consumption per week. And I wrote a bottle of wine to a bottle of Jack. Yeah, I was whiskey storming it.
So was there a few winters that you were instructing up at Ruapehu then?
Yeah, that was a solid gig for 3 years.
Yeah.
And just love the family up there. They're good shit. Steve Marunui's like a lifer. Rachel's sister's a lifer. Like, it's a cool family up there. Lots of people I don't know anymore, obviously. But yeah, it's the spot.
And were you doing back-to-backs?
Yes.
At this time as well?
Yeah, Rach, as soon as... So that was the whole goal. You've got to get your stage one to be able to go for a work visa overseas. And, you know, to say you're, you know, better than a local, that's why they need to bring you in or whatever the immigration stuff is. But, yeah, you do your exams, you get the job. She took me to California and I thought I was going to Texas and it was just, wow, I was not ready.
So what was the first impression though of California? Like, it's a bit of a different world to little old NZ when that's all you know.
Yes, it was crazy. I flew in with Conrad and he, we thought we were having like human resources meet us at the airport in Reno. Nobody showed up. And it's snowing and we take a taxi from Reno all the way to Tahoe and proceed to drive around in the dark. It was insane. And Tahoe was not going well.
Taxi.
It was a fucking pricey taxi. The
driver wouldn't have believed his luck.
Oh, he was elated and then not know at the last minute and go around and say, oh. Yeah. And staff accommodation was rough, dude, back then.
How so?
Oh, they jammed us in like sardines. Be ready for that if you go overseas. Like, make sure you know what the accommodation is going to be like.
Yeah, I guess knowing full well what people in their early 20s are going to be like anyway.
Yeah, savages, yeah, animals.
Bunch of animals.
Just animals, yeah. <that's...
laughs> And what resort was it?
North Star at Tahoe.
North Star.
It was where Rach took us, and she took like heaps of us, Conrad and Ratchet. And yeah, they loved her because she would like pump out the work visas for them.
Sweet. And was this a constant for quite a few years then?
Yeah, returned for 2 years to teach there.
Yeah.
And I say teach, but I mean backline.
yeah, that's becoming a common thing.
It's a common thing. Yeah, right? I'm going to be just an instructor and then I'm just going to sit at the backline.
Yeah, Bilsey and Patty were both notorious backliners too, right?
Yes, met Bilsey at the top of a Boreal pipe one day. It totally blew my mind.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Oh, amazing, great.
Like,
great
dude. Such a great style.
Yeah.
And did you hang out with him afterwards?
No, briefly. We were focused, trying to sit, but we've got the Kiwi connection.
He's a funny motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. And was there any sort of... shit, well, like, how was the level over there? Like, was it one of those things where you're like, fuck, like, I've got some work to do, or...
Oh, yes. Yes. Lots of rippers. Okay, I didn't know how to ride powder the first time I went to Tahoe, and... Well, I struggled severely for like 3 days until someone told me to move my bindings bag.
Yeah, I mean, our idea of powder and their idea of powder is a bit of a different thing, right?
Considerably different, and very quickly was like, everyone says there's no friends on a powder day, but that's not true. If I end up upside down in that tree well, I want you there to come get me. And I'm like, oh, upside down in a tree well, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I didn't take seriously when I first went overseas too. It was like tree wells, like, oh, whatever, dude. And then you start hearing the stories.
Yes.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
And was there any sort of, like, writers you were influencing you, like, at this time? Were you, like, getting information from more than just the whiskey videos?
Finally, yes. I mean, I remember being in the Beginner Bowl, and I think the West Beach Classic or something had happened in Canada, and Tarita Kettis had thrown a backflip. Like, the, you know, goes through the ski school, like, all the gossip of what's coming in. And then I started watching TV videos.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So the instructing in California definitely went, whoa, here's this huge major scene. Everybody's going bananas, and lots of people are doing their own thing. Yeah.
I mean, fuck, Tarita Kettis, like, she was the most untouchable at that time, right?
Oh,
like, well, the best.
The,
like,
best. Totally. Like, just Queen cutting Tara. Edge. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of want to ask, how did, yeah, totally. How did the Nitro sponsorship, or Nitro and Oakley, how did that get into the picture?
Okay, so that was a Whakapapa thing too, and yep. I recently went back and asked Richard and Conrad about that. I was like, it's gotta be one of you two. Richard was probably already writing for them, and Conrad was friends with one of the rep's sons. So I'm thinking that Conrad hooked me up with the reps, he'd go out and ride, they're looking for a track. And I rode out west with some dad type on skis, and he's like, oh, yeah, you're fun. Come on board.
Wow. Oh, it's such a different time, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was very cash. And, yeah, just because I was riding around with Jimmy and Richard sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, you're fine.
So what did that turn into, like, just getting flow boards for the winters? Or?
Yeah, in New Zealand it was a total flow program for me. There wasn't...
there was no cash behind that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I loved that, and always super... was it Maya Sports, I think, was the distributor based in the skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a very sweet family as well. And I felt totally looked after by them on the flow program. And just it blew my mind that anyone would give me a board.
Yeah, that's pretty
really?
Cool,
eh? Like, a board for sure, dude. And at the time, you know, I was in staff accommodation at Whakapapa or National Park. And I had Nicola Thost's poster with the lightning.
Oh, she was the Nitro girl for that time,
right? She was
the
Nitro girl. So that brand awareness then kicked in. And, it's snowboarding in the Olympics. And it was legitimized as far as my parents were concerned. And I didn't
know. Oh, right. So it sort of changed what your parents' perception of what you were doing. But
yeah,
then,
totally.
Yeah, right.
Because otherwise it was pretty looking like Whiskey Storm and Dirtbag shenanigans.
Yeah. I mean, Nicola Thost, that's a name that doesn't come up that often. And, like, Nitro had a pretty solid team in New Zealand. You just mentioned a couple of...
Yeah.
A couple of them, the Hunt brothers.
Yeah, yeah. We were trying to hold down the North Island, and Niels and Jeremy and Methven.
Yeah.
That was good times. Mm-hmm. And Louisa. Maybe that's why I always thought she was a boss, because she was on the team first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's pretty heavy. Like, those Hunt brothers were kind of like, what, the Mia Zarua-Pau for a bit?
Oh, I couldn't get past them without couldn't get anything done without them knowing. No, just kidding.
But, like, were you riding with these guys a bunch, or?
We rode more once we were instructors, because that, you know, we're on the same schedule.
Yeah, right.
The Hunt brothers had a place in Awakuni, and I was firm Tūrangi.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know, firm Whakapapa.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we made turns here and there.
Oh, sweet. No, I was always a big fan of whatever I've seen of Jimmy Hunt in the magazine, so I was always like, man, that's sick.
Yeah, like, yeah, huge gonads.
Yeah, powerful, powerful style.
Yeah.
So, because what, there was a lesson you learnt from incentives or something from Jimmy, right?
That's right. Jimmy and I, 1 year, Whakapapa did a team, and they offered a... a bonus, $1,000 bonus for extra credit going above and beyond. So, you know, it was a normal flow package, get your food and whatever, pass and blah, blah, blah. But this was the first time there was cash on the table and I was after it. And Jimmy, at the end of the season, you submitted what you'd done and Jimmy earned his $1,000 for the cover shot on New Zealand Snowboarder. And yeah, then I think he might have only shot one day to achieve that, whereas I was faffing around flying down to the South Island trying to compete. But I put down some results and held up the Whakapapa name and yeah, got my cash too.
All right, so yeah, lesson learned.
Yeah, one day, and I worked hard all season. It was insane.
I've got that issue somewhere. It's a boss ass cover.
Yeah.
All right, so you were following the competition circuit, what, around instructing or?
Yeah, the sponsor letters from Whakapapa are hilarious because I, you know, got a job and then I said, oh, can I have a... all this time off to go competing, and they were like, no, we'll give you a cheap pass, and it progressively got better, but yeah, you had, at some point you had to do one or the other. You could supplement, and Whakapapa was really kind to me. They let me supervise and do mellow stuff that I could disappear from, come back to. Yeah.
So what were you competing in specifically? Was there any events or...
Slopestyle, big air. I mean, I'd loved the turning as well. Obviously, Rach wasn't going to leave me loose not turning properly.
Yeah.
So I learned to ride some gates in California. And yeah, that was fun.
First time I became aware of your name was in the checkout in New Zealand Snowboarder. One was Will J on the cover.
Yeah.
What was the story with your Queenstown time?
Adventures. Oh, they were adventures.
Yeah.
So I was based at Whakapapa and coming down to compete and, you know, hold our own down here was important, or I thought it was. Plus, Rach was living in Queenstown and she's like, come on down, make it happen. And she basically introduced me to the Queenstown royalty. And
great. So, yeah. Were you there for the whole season then, or were you just...
No, just popped down for contests, couch surfed, and then popped back.
Right. And was there sort of, how was your, because at that time Queenstown was kind of the haven for snowboard culture.
Yes.
And stuff, and there was a lot going on. Was that something that was sort of like caught your attention, or...
I was totally starstruck by Dylan and Denny and everybody. Everybody was amazing, especially the chicks at the competing. It was like Debs and Shaz, and we were having a good time out there.
Yeah. What, Bar to Nah, right?
Bar to Nah? From the Nah to the Bar.
From the Nah to the Bar.
Oh, from the Bar to the Nah, depends on which way you want to do it. Yeah.
And, yeah, because... What, that was sort of the birth of the Remarks Park, and you had like Mel Simmons and Logan Holt as a park crew, and like Legs and those guys.
Yeah.
Do you know Legs?
I know Legs. I know Legs. Yeah. He's epic. His podcast was the best. And he said it the best, shit used to get loose.
Him and AJ are kind of like Queenstown royalty.
Yeah, I remember the day he jumped out of off the chairlift.
You actually were there.
Yes, and my husband's done that too.
What?
Into a half pipe. Yes! I'm like, no lie, just nobody jump off any chairlifts into half pipes.
Hang on, where were you when you did that though? Were you in the crowd by the pipe?
Or? Yeah.
So, because no one was expecting that. Right?
No one was expecting it, except for, I feel like there was some hooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of someone else's run. It's like the most gnarly thing that never got documented.
Yeah, there's lots of things that shouldn't be documented.
that one would have been quite cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Fuck. So, because what was that, Nationals?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Queenstown. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, Queenstown was good times.
Yeah.
And just pumping. There was Japanese everywhere, and everyone seemed like they had a Japanese gig in Queenstown.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had their side Japan gig thing going, which I'd
really love to have got involved with.
Yeah.
But so yeah, Rach took me to California.
So you'd literally go down for the comps and go back to Ruapehu.
Mm-hmm, go back to
Ruapehu. It would have been almost like going from black to white. Then what? As far as what was going on? Like, I'm making an assumption here.
I'm making an assumption? I mean, yeah, no, we were pretty aware of what these people were doing down here. Yeah.
But, like, how was it, like, was the scene comparable to what was going on in Queenstown? Or? Even in that time, going over from Wanaka would be like, whoa, shit's a bit different over here, you know?
I know, it was just the whole thing was crazy to me. It was seemed like it was pumping. You know, town was going wild. The resorts were going wild. Yeah. But, yeah, so going back to Ruapehu was a little mellower.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then the following winter, what, 2000 to 2001, was quite a big one for you as far as being a sponsored rider went?
Yeah. I was lucky enough to get picked up by Nitro USA. And got onto their flow program initially from results at their nationals, USASA. And they basically created a women's battalion to assist selling snowboards, and that was a good gig.
Right, so what did that consist of? Like, what did that even mean?
What did that mean? It was great. So when I went up for nationals and met them the first time, my vibrant personality came through, and my love of snowboarding. And they're like, we need you at On Snow Demos to ride with reps. Tell them you love the product, why you love the product. Just sell the shit.
Right, because was this because Nitro was trying to build like a woman's line or something?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, totally. Right. They were ready to support women all the way. It was great.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's nice that they went right down to the boots on the ground.
Yeah, they went right to the ground. And so that was, the plan was guerrilla marketing. And then, so the first season was epic, but the second season, when everyone knew we were coming, it was insane. And Rach was on tour then too.
So how was it insane? Like,
we just went mental.
And so you're touring the States doing this sort of thing?
Yeah, like, so in the States, they have On Snow Demos where the local reps or regional people go to ride and test product. And then, you know, there's a big trade show in Las Vegas. And that's where everyone goes to do their orders and stuff like that. So stuff like that, you know, how snowboards get sold.
Tell me more.
Yeah. Well, you can look in the magazines or do whatever, but I don't know. Fuck.
Oh, I just thought I handed cash over at the counter and walked away with the snowboard.
Yeah. Oh, I know. There's lots of people behind the scenes. And I was giving R&D feedback, which was really fun. And my product manager at the time, Tim Wiser, said, why do you like this Nitro snowboard? Because I was just going off about how great it was. And I couldn't really answer. And he said, go out and ride the other products so you can give a reasonable answer.
So when you see that, like other boards,
yeah, other brands, other boots, other bindings, go do the actual yards and the other stuff so you can intelligently talk about a comparison.
So was there a whole squad of girls doing this too?
That's right, yeah. So there's maybe six of us, 4 to 6, depending on injuries and all that kind of availability. And then their AM team riders would join us, and sometimes someone fancy might show up, like the Huffmans. And
shit, so that could actually be kind of a bit of a mobile circus.
Oh, it was a fucking circus. I cannot believe that the sales manager at the time went with that program.
Yeah.
And so Paul, who was my contact, my sports here in New Zealand, came over to one of the trade shows one year, and he's like, what the fuck is Nitro doing up with you two washed up old cows here, Rach and I, just grinning, like, we are on the best program here, dude, shh. But, you know, it was a weird time for them. Nicola Thost had hurt her knee and signed with Burden, and nobody felt bad about that. That was great for her, get your cash, girl.
Yeah.
And they had a whole marketing campaign with this really adorable 12-year-old who I watched right at the US Nationals. And just mad skills. And the program was to sell this little tiny girl with all these big burly dudes. And that would be their awesome marketing campaign. But unfortunately, she died. And they were just like in a car accident.
She died?
Yeah, oh, right. In a car accident in Mammoth. So they were left like in the lurch. So they did this battalion thing, and it was awesome. I mean, yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. And so you weren't instructing at this time then? Or did...
I went back for 2 years to teach at North Star at Tahoe, yeah. And then Nitro picked me up, and eventually I got to live at the team house in Squaw.
Right, so that became like your job then. And
yeah.
So how'd you go visa-wise getting in through customs with that shit then?
Ah, that was always going to be a trip to Canada or Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I'm asking this, someone that's nearly been deported a couple of times from certain countries.
Yes. Don't mess with Border Patrol.
Mm. Yep, they don't have a sense. They don't like jokes.
No.
Yeah.
And I was trying to compete, you know, here and there. They're like, if you want to do that, go for it. They basically said, can you pass a drug test? And I said, probably not. And they were like, then you're off for filming. And that's the route you should go.
I guess maybe that's some good realistic career advice.
Yeah, we kept it real.
Yeah, shit. What's this? I heard about a backcountry accident about that time with Tim Manning.
We went out to New Brighton in Utah, and
with Nitro
riders, one AM rider, myself, and an international. And it was my first time going out in the backcountry, and everything that I learned at OPC was forgotten.
Oh no, just what with the excitement of doing what you're doing?
I fucking didn't put one and two together, but I guess I must have some whiskey storm lingering then. But I never went into the backcountry without a pack after that experience. I was just misjudged how that landing was going to go, and knee went into an eye, and the international rider ended up scrambling out of there for help. But it was rough.
Jesus, so what, you knocked yourself out? Or
I know, I was safe. It was my boyfriend at the time. And
He kneed himself in the
eye. He kneed himself in the eye, and it was a and spasmed and did all the scary things, and we were quite away from him. It was rough. Yeah, so I find that these things, these backcountry accidents, can take some time.
Yeah, because you had to wait for help to come to you.
Yeah, because no cell phones.
Mm.
No fucking
So
SOS button.
Someone scrambled to find help.
Physically ran back into the resort to get help.
Right, and what did the help look like then? Was it a bunch of patrollers coming out, or was it heli?
Helicopter to, I don't remember the fancy hospital in Utah, but it was all paid for. It was amazing.
Holy shit. So, and what was the damage to your boyfriend at the time then? So was it a concussion that led to other shit, or?
It was, was he going to have his eye still?
Holy fuck.
Yeah, because it just disappeared. into his swelling. Yeah, it was super scary, and it was, you know, I wasn't supposed to be there with him.
Right.
So then I had to call his parents, and they thought I was a telemarketer because I obviously didn't put myself together to make that fucking call.
Yeah.
And those calls are really challenging.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to ask is this Chris's parents, and they kept hanging up on me, and then finally I looked, your son's hurt, and then they listened and all put me on speakerphone with his seven sisters or something. Jesus. Yeah, don't like making those calls.
No.
Yeah.
And so what was the takeaway from that?
Oh, so much. Just so much. You should have a backpack.
Yeah.
You should have communications and you should have some solid first aid if you want to mess around back there.
Mm. Yeah. So I ask them that because every season I see a couple of She'll Be Right characters and some of them hopefully listening and maybe hear these stories and be like, oh shit, maybe I need to have my shit together before I leave the resort boundary.
Yes, then, yes. If you turn up at a large resort overseas and they're bombing, put your fucking thing on. Put your transceiver on.
Yeah.
Because even if you're going to be picking the best lines, doing whatever, at least you can assist if something happens.
Mm.
There's lots of, like, Skor has so many terrain traps in resort. Mm. And yeah, the bomb and everything, but
they don't fuck about if they catch you ducking either, do they?
Yeah, no, they do not.
Yeah. And what was this Alaskan summer camp?
Oh, yeah, that was all through Nitro.
Yeah.
Through my product manager, Tim. He obviously sold snowboards to Borderline, and they hosted a summer camp every year. And that was a real eye-opener.
Alaska's a cool place.
Yeah, man, 10 out of 10. We were in a little town called Girdwood, out of Anchorage, Alaska. And they're, they had punters. They had lots of, like, lots of kids, school groups. And so I was supposed to be making sandwiches before riding and then helping the kids on hill. And I tried to do that a lot of the time.
All right. But it sounds like there's more to the story than sandwiches.
It was, okay, that was like some of the best springing riding I'd ever done. Jason Borgstead was a big personality there, and he had a kid drink spring glove juice one day.
What?
Spring glove juice.
Juice.
You know how those spring gloves get nice and icky?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and then you squeeze it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was filth. It was filth. This kid did it because he wanted to be, you know, I don't know. And they had this tiny little kind of pathetic little hand-dug melting pipe. And I saw him do what looked like just like a cartwheel roll.
Mm.
And it was the beginning of a McTwist. And so I did like my little cartwheel roll. And yeah, that was my biggest move back in the day, was a McTwist. Land stomped one once in front of people.
Oh, take it. I've never done one.
And that was kind of the time. A five was a big deal back then.
I mean,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, there were some pretty famous names on this camp too, right? Like the Juno boys and shit.
Yeah. Mark Lambic was one of the coaches. Chauncey Sorensen, Ashley Cole.
So you were like riding with those guys then?
Yeah, that's who the boyfriend's mates were.
Oh, right. But that would have, helped your riding a bunch?
Immensely. Ashley Cole was huge. On dialing in my VAC 180s, we had lots of sessions on that one. And that's where I rode my first rail.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
It was amazing. And one of the Alaskans yelled, "Get some, girl!" And that was my password for many years. And not getting in by beers. Like, the beer thing was real. And it was light all the time. And it's crazy.
And that was up on the Alaska Resort.
Yeah.
That's a cool resort, that place.
Yeah, man.
Shit, so that's quite a quick progression. Because, your checkout in 2001 had, 50-50 to front board.
Yeah.
And then so literally your first rail was the summer camp. And then
I thought I could do 50, it.
50-50 to front
boards. I'm pretty sure I could do something, I don't know.
Yeah, well that's a pretty quick progression, is it? Or or am I just shit at rails?
No, I am shit at rails.
But
I don't know. I wanted it. And I saw Tara doing it. And I thought I could too.
Mm. Rad. No, that's pretty sick. I just assumed that you were doing rails way before that.
No, I was trying to do cute turns, and I don't know, I feel like slope styles were just three jumps in a row sometimes.
Well, what was the standard? At that time, with when you were competing in the slope style,
yeah,
what was the standard of girls riding? Like, what was happening over those jumps?
Okay, I saw Kimmy Fassini do a backflip, and she was like 18.
Yeah.
Or maybe 16. And I was like, whoa. And throwing it down in contests.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I don't know, Tara had her straight white backy. So the backy was big.
So was that sort of the winning standard in the competition then, was like 540s and backflips and stuff?
I feel like it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, just not eating shit.
Yeah. And was that sort of standard mirrored in New Zealand as well? Like, were the top girls doing that shit too?
Shoot, I don't remember what we were doing. Okay.
So you had more fun than everyone.
Oh my god. Okay, so Rachel and I, we went to some Mount Hutt Big Air, and it was like a trip overseas was the prize for the girls. For the girls.
Yeah.
And Deb threw down a kind of messy backflip, and Rach did her thing, and I don't know, I threw down something straight here, and that was the day where H and I realized I couldn't see the jump. She's like, what do you mean it comes into view as you go up the ramp? And I've needed contacts all this time.
No way.
Yeah.
So you've done a whole chunk of your snowboarding without...
without a lot of definition.
Like, kind of blindish.
So maybe that's why I picked up the rails. I could finally see.
Well, that's what that thing is.
Like, the vision's good here.
That's kind of crazy that you're doing all that snowboarding without definition.
Yeah, I had no idea that I was missing it. But I knew something was wrong, because I wasn't quite getting every... You know, once you put me on the exact same track as somebody else down a course, sometimes it wasn't working out for me the same way.
Yeah, right. Oh, out of it.
I know, dude. I don't know. Okay, and one of the other crazy contests that... Okay, the Methven Big Air in front of the Blue Pub on the sketchy scaffolding, whoopity-dippity.
Yep.
Yeah, ruined my reef career on that jump.
Reef career.
You know, the reef career models, they were big back then, because there was no, like, PC anything. Yeah, that one was a rough contest. There was a grit in the snow, the temperature changed, and nobody was making it over the jump, and then we all started throwing different waxes on our boards, and I got the right wax but not the right jump, and you fell out of the sky and landed on my butt and stood up and skeeved dry your eye and then passed out. And I said, okay, Yuri's not alright. Rach is like, I'll take her home. So Rach and Sky King took me back to our accommodation, put heat on it, and Rach massaged my butt for me. And then she gave me Jack Daniels and went out and partied and left me to it.
So what was the injury then, if you like stood up and passed out and then...
I think that was a pain response, but it was like a hematoma. So there's a calcification on my left butt cheek that has ruined my reef career.
Right. And if anyone's wondering, maybe they Google reef girls and see what they 90s. Come up with. Yeah, the 90s. I mean, shit, man, some of those, like, Big Ears and Town were a commonplace thing back then, but fuck, the setups were raw as fuck.
Raw.
I think Hayley Ashby sent me through a picture. I put it up on Instagram of Hayley Mayne about to drop into the one of the Queenstown Big Ears. And it just looks, she's got to ride these wooden slats before she can get to the snow. It's like a mandatory jib, just ducka 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 ducka.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the one in Wanaka even wobbled. It was fucked up.
Yeah, and then, all right, throw a trick off there.
Oh, that was a pivotal time.
Yeah.
So the little Tora Bright came over and did a 360 over there.
I remember that. I was in the crowd.
Yeah, okay, and I was not throwing a 360 over there. So and then that, I was like, ooh.
So was that one of those moments of like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I knew those girls existed from being overseas. And she was, I don't know, training with Andrew Burton and riding a lot of mammoths.
So I remember that Big Ear. That was the last of the Wanaka ones. It was down in the Cadrona Valley. And I remember Leggett was shotgunning beers before he dropped in.
Oh, yeah, standard.
And Steve Ferguson ran away with the mic from one of the Pulsate or girls or whatever. And I remember, yeah, it was like 12-year-old Tora Bright. And I just crawled off like, 12-year-old, what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like rock solid back three.
Yes. Yes.
And like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
We can't do that over there. Like, wow. And then that's, I think that's the first anyone outside of Australia probably knew of her name.
Yeah.
Was that moment. And Quentin won the whole thing. Quentin Robbins.
I can't remember any details.
I just remember seeing him do the best, one of the best backside 180s with no grab I've ever seen. It was just floating rock solid in the air forever and be like, God, I hope I could do them like that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's my favourite trick.
Mm. Oh, the only trick.
Yeah.
So at that moment then, did you start thinking about what was next or what else, like what did that set you on?
Yes, my parents had been hoping I would think about what then was that would think about what was next. Because I, you know, when we were at North Star, let me double back, when we were at North Star, Jeremy, my husband, who you just met earlier, and Rach had both been snowboard coaches and they had an incredible roster of kids that they taught that have turned into like icons of the sport, really.
Oh, really?
Really.
Like, who were some of these names?
Kimmy Piccini was one of the girls and yeah, she's an icon. Sammy Lubke.
Oh, wow.
He was a little spitball back in the day.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Jonathan Powell, and he's become a really close friend. He's like a brainiac and re-qualified back onto the Freeride World Tour recently. I was very proud of him. He had a great season. And the Woody kids, I have to mention them. Yeah, and Summer Fenton, Jenna Jamisi, just the Foy kids, so many. There were so many incredible kids, and they were just mind-blowing and sending it, and I had no chance once I saw them coming.
Right. So did you end up going back to coaching or instructing then, or what was the... Or were you like, fuck this, I'm just out of this snowboard thing?
I peaced out. I had an injury, actually. I had an injury, my dad passed away, and I just wanted to kick it on the farm with my mom. But Jeremy would not have that and called every day for like 3 months, and my mom would be like, you have to talk to this boy. And the love story that Jeremy and I are back to California, and we just knew we wanted to ride together forever.
Sweet.
And that's kind of our love
and
story.
And so you guys met through Rachel.
We did.
Yeah,
we met through Rach, and Jeremy's best friend is a great coach, and we've had so many great turns with him and her, and yeah, we're a pretty tight family.
Well, we've mentioned Rachel a few times,
so
I've actually got a question from her.
I can't wait.
She reckons... She's asked me to play the less Canadian version, so here goes.
No.
Hey Tony, hey Carla, hey, my question to you is, what's one of the highlights of your snowboarding career?
There we go, not as controversial as you thought.
Jesus, it's clean, thank you darling. Oh, what is the highlight? Oh, I mean, babe, it was meeting you. Shit, none of this would have happened without you. You hired me as a... rookie instructor, taught me how to turn, took me overseas for the first time, introduced me to my husband. Girl, it's you. You're
Rachel,
the highlight.
Rachel, the highlight.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I mean, I hope that she comes back to New Zealand.
I guarantee she will.
And come on.
I don't know when, but I know she's coming back.
Because, she's in Red Mountain these days, eh?
Oh my God, her home resort is so rad.
Yeah.
Just so rad. So you totally understand why she's there. Not with Thomas. And raising Nora, and Nora's a total fucking repito.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, of course, right?
It's gonna be.
Of course.
And then I got here, 0102, you were still with Nitro, so we're jumping around a bit, but we do that anyway.
Yeah, yeah, good.
So our listeners get over it. Back into Squaw at the Nitro Team House.
Yeah.
And then there was a fresh-faced thing that couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
It was better than everyone.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Aero had his first introduction to California, and I think he sat on the couch for quite a while, and we went mental around him, but then he went out riding, and that did the talking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That did the talking.
So his introduction was you animals.
Yeah, savages. Yeah, savages. And we're stuffed in like sardines and yeah.
And this was with that battalion demo sort of
thing. Yeah, I was doing that. The other, there was reps, boys turning screws, and then a pro room, and yeah, riders coming through all the time.
And how were you lucky to get out of Vegas with your lives that year?
Okay, I have told my daughter the story, so I'm going to go for it. No, I can't. Oh my god! Found ourselves in possession of a rather large eight ball that we could not fly with. So we stood on a street corner to sell it. And we got into some gangster car and went to a place and exchanged references, and we made it out of there alive, and we will never do that again. Grace, you will always be supported and never have to make poor decisions.
So you literally go there for a snowboard trade show and end up
doing all sorts of things.
Probably not the worst or most controversial Las Vegas trade show story either, right?
No, but there's a lot of shockers out there. That trade show was just out of control.
Yeah.
Was it out of control?
Yeah, I've never been to one.
Oh, my but, God.
Like...
Okay, so Pat might have talked about John Graham, and I forget, the Rome or something, and their booth was Insanity, and they had a panty paper. So if you took your female people up there with skirts and stuff on, everybody underneath could see.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, it was a boys' club back then, you know? And the Vulcan people were going mental in white suits and... A lot of drugs, alcohol, good times. And I think people went to strip clubs.
Vegas,
yeah,
right?
I did not, but yeah, I think people did. So yeah, Nitro was so good to me, and I'm very thankful for their support from both places. It was a lot of good times and a lot of great boards. And a lot of great tunes. I think it might have been a cold call because I like to send in your CV and hope for the best kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And Nitro Nitro USA were the ones who said, get yourself a CV. You know, do you know how to write a CV? No, I do.
Yeah.
He's the most creative. Anyway, put one of those together and just sent it into Oakley hoping for the best, I think. And yeah, Dylan picked me up, and then he connected me with Gus Buckner, and I went to HQ in California. It was amazing, and he's like, do a product grab, whatever you want. It was the best. So I was loaded up in Oakley. I had the best Oakley jacket when I was riding.
Alright, so was that, were they an outerwear and eyewear sponsor for you then? Or?
They were not, they were an eyewear sponsor. I don't think there was a difference back then, I don't know. You were with Oakley and wore all their stuff, or you were with Nitro and wore all their stuff? Because Nitro was starting their woman's outerwear, so I'm sure I wouldn't have been I don't know what I was doing, actually.
Yeah, right.
I think it was just the shop was full of all sorts of stuff, so I grabbed whatever, like prescription glass frames and like all because obviously I needed those.
Good shout.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Loved that. And
so did that end up, so it felt like you sort of disappeared from the New Zealand thing for a while.
I really did. Well, I moved to California full time.
Right.
Yeah.
With Jeremy.
Yes.
Sweet. And so what was that looking like? Were you still involved with snowboarding when you were in California and stuff? Or?
We turned weekend warriors. You got real jobs and all that kind of stuff. Had a deep community in Tahoe that we would couch surf with, particularly his best friend Scott Harris. And Scott was came up through the teaching ranks with us at North Star, and we did our level three together at SCORE, and Rach was the examiner for that, which was insane. And there was a written exam format. I'm going to come back to Scott, I promise.
Yeah.
There was a written exam part for the teaching credentials, yes, yeah. And I left everything blank that I didn't know. And Rach is like, you almost failed the written. What happened? I was like, I thought you were going to fill it in. She's like, no!
Because level three is quite when sort of freestyle starts coming into it.
Yeah, they're looking for a 360. They're looking for switch carve turns. They're looking for high performance writing.
So something I forgot to ask back a while back is like, how many girls were instructing and doing like the high-end instructing back when you were at your peak of doing?
It was pretty sparse to find a level three or equivalent full cert down here in New Zealand, I think, but I don't know. I enjoyed listening to someone's podcast that said they just made up the manual for the New Zealand snowboarder.
Oh, that might have been Richie.
No, Richie's very professional. I met him in Japan. Yeah. I don't. No, it was back in the day.
Oh, you
like the originals.
Yeah,
the originals. Yeah. Sorry. So Scott had a team of kids that he coached, and there's some heavy hitter kids' names in there too. And we had Grace, and she was a little tot on a snowboard, and we found ourselves at the side of a half pipe and slope styles cheering on these kids. It was rad.
Yeah.
So Grace had a lot of riding with Hayley Langland.
Oh shit, that's quite a formidable riding buddy.
She was so great. And we saw what it took from Hayley. She was homeschooling, so was Toby Miller. They homeschooled so that they could ride every day. And I know that's kind of what's going on now, the high performance stuff. But it was like a massive family commitment that these people make. It's awesome. Sorry, what was the question?
Don't know. We sort of went somewhere else. That's totally what happens. Oh, I did want to sort of say back in, say when I started in the end, so about the same time.
Yeah.
You started to see a few more sort of female instructors.
Yes.
But like as far as sort of the examiners and even the high-end instructors, they were pretty thin and far between down this part. Now, when you were traveling, was that something that was visible to you when you were traveling to the States? I'm like, right, it's actually possible? Or was it, how were you seeing that it was possible to go for your level three or go for all of that stuff,
Everything that I thought was possible was because Rach told me I could do it.
Right.
Yeah, it was just that simple.
Yeah, right.
It's just that simple. You need to do the level three, and this is how you train. And so the year, the prep year to our level three, Rach and Jeremy were my morning examiners on Tuesday and Thursday, and I couldn't get away from them, and they were awesome. But as far as lots of, and there were other females that took it with me and passed, but I have friends that tried for many years to get through it.
Yeah.
Especially the level three over there. But there's some great women out there now. Really strong riders. I've taken some clinics from Anna. I'm so sorry, I can't remember your last name, babe. But there's some incredibly strong girl riders these days.
Yeah. Well, are you still following snowboarding much now? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the gram, and I like to watch Natural Selection.
Yeah.
And we did take particular interest in the Olympics because we had a wee flutter on it. A wee flutter, and made a bet.
Oh, right.
And it was a three-way parlay or a parlay or so. I don't know. Scott's the gambler in the family. And he's also the one standing at the top of the half pipe. And he sent out the boys' text, who's in? And only Jeremy responded. So then we went, and that was good stuff. And we bet on Zoe, but the boys didn't turn out the way we wanted.
Oh, Zoe's a safe bet, though.
She's a safe bet.
Yeah.
And it was back-to-back, then to natural selection.
So, Zoe's the main one you're sort of following now?
For sure, and Hayley. Like, we celebrate Hayley. We lost a coach. Okay, fine. Zoe or Hayley. Zoe and Hayley.
Don't make me pick.
Hayley was the first person to tell me about Zoe. She's like, oh, man, that's cool, Kiwi Jack.
Oh, yeah, I guess you were in the States at the
I had no idea what was going on over here.
Yeah, right.
Was definitely, like, paying attention to my Tahoe peeps, but yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, see, I didn't even think about that because I'm so used to Zoe being...
Part of the fabric.
But, like, Rachel had long pieced out to America, Canada.
Yeah.
And you're... Yeah, right, so... Oh, shit. And like I said, we're jumping all around here. What's this revival, best year of your life snowboarding?
Oh, I had the most glorious year in 2018, and all because of Rach. She pulled me out of teaching retirement to go to Japan and teach an all-women's week fun thing. And that had been Fiona Duncan's gig for a long time, and so I checked in with her and she was having a baby, and she gave me the impression it was a booze cruise. And I'm in for that. Yeah. I'll take on babysitting that. But it wasn't. Rach came out swinging and she did some high performance coaching, and I was not ready, and they were not impressed with my efforts out there. Sorry, team.
Like, never mind, the vending machine's got beers.
Yes. Yeah. It was all good. Love Japan, and got to catch up with a girlfriend in Tokyo, and it's just the best. Mm. And Rach and I roomed together. And sometimes that can result in us just cackling for hours. And I thought that she might ask something about that. But anyway. And so then Rachel invited me to stay with her at Red Resort. And I went up to her home thing and checked out her man and her baby. And
so it's been a while since you guys have seen each other then.
Yeah, we had a, when I had Grace, I totally, like, checked out of anything but Grace for a number of years, and Rach was coaching internationally I lost track for her, that part, because I was just baby blinkers.
Yeah, right. And so, first time to Japan, how was your first Japal turn?
Oh, second time to Japan, so but first time PAL turning, and, loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Life-changing, right?
Life-changing.
First Japal turn, it's just...
So good. And we got plenty of it. Yeah, it was good.
Was that with Mint Tours?
It was with Mint Tours, right. Yeah. And they're still charging along.
I think I seen something on Rachel's Insta about that.
Cool,
still doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Rachel's definitely still doing it. So Mint in Japan was great for a week. Staying with Rach the following month for a week and competing for the first time in 100 years, she sent me down a bank slalom.
Of course.
She's right on a game, and I was like 10 seconds slower than her, but that still got me second in the old girl category.
But she's fast. I mean,
she's fast as fuck.
We used to, when she was HPC coaching, so this is like JJ Tim Herbert era, we'd go over to the Quest Bank Slalom over in Queen Coronet, and it's raw as fuck and lots of flying snowballs. And
yes.
And because everyone knew she was going to be the fastest, she got the biggest and hardest and gnarliest snowballs thrown at her.
God, and
she still didn't stop her. She still smoked everyone.
She can put her blinkers on and charge.
So I'm not surprised. Bank slalom. That screams Rachel Newton.
Yeah, it does. Mm. It does. Technical little turns, you're not going to get past her. And, you know, we're both in the old girl category, but she put, like, second fastest time for the day for women down. Like, she's not going out to compete in the old girls. She's going out still to compete against the open class.
Yeah, like the open still wouldn't be able to keep up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And Red Mountains, that's a cool fucking mountain, man.
Really cool.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Probably best guide there would be her and her husband.
Yes, Tom's a phenomenal rider. Yeah.
Yeah.
Local legend.
Right. So I lived there in 2001, Red Mountain. And that's a story for another time. Yeah. But I was blown away with that mountain. It's just like, wow, this is a humbling mountain.
Yes. You know? Yeah, even the jealous, like.
You sort of go there being like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. And then you have a standard run down there. You're like, fuck, I've got some work to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Her little Nora's going to be a crazy free rider.
And then...
And so it was like Rach got me back into the bank slalom thing.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, maybe I can do a bit of bank slaloming again. And the next month we went to the Rocker Memorial Bank Slalom held on Dunner Summit.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to make a huge claim here that it might be the world's only backcountry banked slalom.
Country bank slalom.
Yeah, man. Right. So no lifts, hand dug.
Rad.
Yeah, man. The community that throws that together are amazing. The bank slalom is raising funds for a skate park in Truckee as a memorial for a person who died in resort in an avalanche. Resort.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, so that's the best bank slalom in my book. The community's incredible, and I've had a very good streak there. A win in the old girl category, and come home with free boards, which I really love. Raffles, because obviously raffles,
Well, it's kind of rad that with, say, the competitions, like, we're starting to see a resurgence in, like, bank slaloms and accessible things to compete in again, just a, I don't know if competition's the right word, but more like community gathering or something.
Yes.
You know, and because like we have it here with like Dogged most years does the mini pipe champs, and again, it's not, you don't have to be fucking Terriator rider, it's just about community being together, and it's kind of cool to see these bank slaloms that celebrate like riding your snowboard.
Yes.
Using your edges.
Yes. And, oh, well, things get very creative post when the little timer things come out. Oh, and then it turns into an expression session. And it's just like Nate Holland's there, Dan Duncan's there. I don't know. Crazy people are there throwing down crazy shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's a bank slalom community. That's his name. Andy Finch goes there and provides food.
Oh, right.
Which is very kind of him.
Sick. Mm-hmm. And speaking of bank slaloms, did you manage to get into the Mount Baker one, which is like the bank slalom of all bank slaloms?
Bank slalom, yes. And Denny had been the year before, so I checked in with him and I was like, what am I going to do? And he's like, you'll be fine, just rock up there. He had contacts and made a great trip out of it. I seriously misjudged the situation and hired a camper and thought that I could camp in the parking lot. That's when I discovered I was not for van life.
How so?
The rig that I had hired, the water froze the first night. And I did not have enough heating. I had this little buddy kind of thing that was putting out gas, and so the decision was, do I gas myself out or do I freeze?
Canal.
It was not going well.
You're on your own.
And I was on my, I was meant to meet the Foy family. They were meant to be parked right next to me. But I made some friends in the parking lot, as you do at Mount Baker.
Yeah.
And the guy was like a barbecue butcher in town and a ski patroller there, and he was my go-to if I got really scared or thought I was totally gonna die. It's insane.
Oh man.
The great experience that I did have there though was getting to go out on the Shishkin Arm and do a little hiking or backcountry, and that was exhausting because it's like out of ski resort, it's just a stairmaster for like it feels like a mile, and then it turns into like fun stuff. But
Baker's got a reputation for like humbling inbounds terrain. Mm-hmm. And how was it at the bank slalom? There's a lot of big names. and legends show up for
legends,
that.
Absolute legends there. Industry, people, reps, you know, that kind of whole thing.
Was there one of those holy shit alongside these heavyweights, or like, well, how did the whole thing work?
In my category, I don't know if I was super aware what was going on, but it was a weird thing because Skin Dog and myself and a couple of other people from Tahoe, like Colin and Summer, we were pretty close and got in, and we were wondering if there was something going on. And I was so intimidated by the whole crowd that I really just hung out with Summer, or, you know, the Tahoe people I knew. Did reconnect with the Juno boys there, which was nice. Yeah.
Sweet, they've been, yeah, a few years
later,
eh?
Yeah, a few years later.
And how'd you go in the bank Salem?
Well, I didn't have Rachel Jeremy, so I was very unsuccessful. So basically, I can't ride without my husband or my bestie.
I thought it was a hard one to get into, that event.
It's a lottery.
All right.
I mean, there are industry passes, so and the previous winners, you know, all those lots, and then they have a little lottery. So literally just filled out a form and paid $5.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Oh, that whole time I thought you had to...
No, you didn't have to do anything to get in on a lottery. The bank slalom thing was awesome, and once I felt like that was cool, I started thinking I could go in the backcountry.
Yep.
And I wanted to get a slipboard and do the thing. And so all these people who had previously been on the snowboard teams or the North Star team, they helped me. So Jenna picked my board and Jonathan cut my skis, and my first trip out was with Johnny Foy. And that was also a very humbling experience. And I did not ride my splitboard in resort beforehand. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to do this. And I had some childhood skiing experience. So the uphill was great and the views were amazing. And the downhill was interesting. Maybe it's just my board, Jenna. They're not high performance machines, I found. But I haven't ridden a whole heap of them. So I adventured out into the backcountry with friends and realized I didn't know what the protocols were. And I mean, I had the equipment and I thought I knew how to use it, but I had no avalanche awareness. So that was a big thing for me to become educated. I took an avalanche awareness course, practiced a heap, and as a birthday present, Jeremy sent me out after the course for this exclusive terrain behind Squaw. And it didn't go great, and Johnny broke his leg, and he's my third friend to break a leg with me and second on snow. And I was thinking,
was that from his riding, or did the slope give away, or
He rides really fast.
Yeah.
He's a fast rider. And I don't know, it was a shit day. Okay, so I have a little bitterness for the company that took us out. Because if Squaw's closed, which it was on this day, it's probably not your day to go out into the backcountry.
No.
Yeah. And all signs were bad, and I had a bad dream about it. And because originally I was just going with this guide. And I had a bad dream, and so then I invited a babysitter along, someone who I totally respected in the backcountry, and yeah, it didn't work out so good. And that's another long ordeal of a day.
Yeah. I mean, a broken leg in the backcountry, you're not moving anywhere.
You're not. It was a full, a full response from the patrol team, and they said they could have... the Squaw patrol team, they said Palisades, sorry people, Squaw's now called Palisades.
Alright.
Yeah. The patrol had a full response and they were only able to do that because the resort was closed.
Fucking hell. Yeah. So that...
he banana boat, they put him in a boat and they had to, because of where he was, rope him and drag him up and out of where he was.
Holy shit.
So it was a lot of manpower, a lot of MHG or something, fancy guides.
Yeah.
Who have those kind of mountain skill stuff. Yeah. It was an ordeal. And I had no idea how exhausted I would be, and I could barely make the hike out of it, which would have, you know, but I was emotionally distressed. And they did have a cat waiting for us once we got back in resort.
And it's one of those things, though, where, like, that sixth sense or whatever, the things that you sort of dismiss, probably should listen to a bit. Like, you know, like, I'm just saying from, like, I've had my own experiences with burials and stuff.
Yeah.
And I dismissed that whole sixth sense tingly thing.
You, like, had the feeling first.
Yeah, I'm overthinking it, you know. Yeah. And then I got buried, you know. And it's sort of something that maybe we all sort of need to actually
listen to,
pay
ourselves
a bit more attention to, you know.
I totally agree. And so that was a traumatic experience for me, and from that I went on to take my wilderness first responder, because obviously on the snow, you know, the thing about it is if you can't keep them warm, it doesn't fucking matter what's wrong with them.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. A backpack, good shit, you know.
Where's life taking you now? Like, you're back in New Zealand?
Yeah, living back in Hawke's Bay with the fam, hitting up Tura with the Rat Pack.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. We found a riding crew and it's awesome.
So, like, why Tura? I thought you were a fucker papa.
I am. I'm sorry, babe. I'm cheating on you. Tura's just damn closer to we are in Hawke's Bay. Yeah. So we take a southern route through, I don't know, Gentilani sometimes. Yeah.
Oh, cool. And because I've never ridden Ruapehu, what would be the difference between Tura and Whakapapa? Like, what's the...
There was a staunch difference back in the day. Yeah. It was just all about Whakapapa. But Tura has... gained my love and respect for snowboarders. There's no T-bars.
Yeah.
There used to be T-bars back in the day, I'm sure. There used to be T-bars at Tura, but today there's no T-bars at Tura, and that makes it just glorious. Both of them have impact kind of issues. One day we spent at Whakapapa, there was 6,000 people on hill. 2,000 of them were skiing.
Right.
So the other 4,000 are in the parking lots, on the gondola, and in the cafes, which is great because they're the people buying the souvenirs and the food and all that stuff.
So if you can get in the car park, you're stoked.
Yes, buy the VIP pass. It's so worth it there.
Yeah.
The VIP parking. Yeah. Because if you can... The Bruce Road closes now.
Yeah,
like, they just stop you at the shadow. Sorry. And then it's at the discretion. I wouldn't want that job. To be at the Bruce Road one.
Yeah, right. And that never used to happen back in the day.
We got creative with our parking and...
Because we were experiencing that at Cadrona too.
Oh,
definitely,
okay.
Like last year, like 2022, like we were... It's the first time my 20-plus years of working there where we had to constantly close the road and turn people away.
No way!
You know, and so, they had to change the way they did the passes and stuff this year. So it's interesting to hear that similar thing is going on in the North Island.
Similar thing has happened. Definitely at Whakapapa, it's more of a Disneyland vibe. But once you get out on the ski resort, it's great.
Because they're all in the cafes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So we love that part. But, you know, just moving through all of that is a thing.
Yeah. So you're really going to make sure you're up there early or some shit. Then.
Yes, and that's not us.
Yeah.
We can't get there before 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And the release, you know.
Yeah.
It's important up there.
So what was the reason or the thing that brought you back to NZ?
Oh, it was multiple reasons. Grace to go to school, Jeremy to get his citizenship. So Jeremy, Grace, I'm home to hang out on the property and help Mum with the animals. And our dog is living the most amazing retirement. He cannot believe his luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a tiny little chihuahua from the shelter, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Just a mutt, and he's the best.
He gets to run around the fields all day. And...
Oh, yeah. He can't believe the lawn is his kingdom, you know? The smallest dog with the largest lawn.
Mm. Well, Carla, that's our notes kind of wrapped up. Is there any thank yous and shout outs you'd like to give out before we get into our enders?
Absolutely. Thank yous and shout outs to the two companies that supported me the most, Oakley and Nitro and Oakley. Obviously a shout out to Rach because she's the massive influence in my life, snowboarding and otherwise. Hubs for wanting to ride with me every day. That's awesome. Thanks, babe. Yeah, and just anyone who let us crash, because there's a lot of couch surfing to make it work.
Yeah.
So thank you so much to anyone who opened their home or garage or car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how it gets done.
Totally. Oh, well, Enders, you know the drill here.
Yep.
All right.
I think. I don't know.
Favorite rider, male and female?
Oh, well, Zoe's my favorite female rider and Jeremy's my favorite male rider. But my favorite person to ride with would be Rach.
Favorite mountain?
Fuck, Papa.
Favorite style on a board?
Oh, well, that's Hayley for sure.
Hayley.
Langland?
Hayley Langland.
Hayley Langland, yeah.
Cool. Favorite board?
The one with the lightning, the Nitro Lightning.
What's is that the Nikola?
Thost, yeah.
Micro Storm, Nikola?
Yeah. Storm. That's the word.
Favorite video part?
Oh, when Tara Takedis lit her name in the snow and she did the huge long rail.
She was putting it. Was that the MacDog one?
I think it was MacDog.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Tom Hull will know in the comments.
Perfect.
Favourite gig?
Being Gracie's mum.
Sweet. Favourite city?
Jeez, it used to be San Francisco, but it's just gone to the dogs. Have to say Tokyo.
Favourite trick?
Fat 180.
Favourite board graphic?
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Sorry.
That's all right.
It's the storm.
Yeah. Who has the best method?
Shit, Sick Vic. He's a prodigy of Jamie Lynn. He's our local hero back in the day.
That'll do it,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, Jamie Lynn. Yeah.
And final bonus question. What's the key to a good method?
Oh, hang it out to dry. You got to hold that thing and float it out.
Awesome. Well, Carla, thank you so much for your time and enjoy the rest of your time down here.
Thank you so much, Tony.